On this episode of the NHL at the Rink podcast, we talked to Doug Plagans, the Panthers radio broadcaster, all about the Florida Panthers trading for Seth Jones and the team right now as they look to defend their Stanley Cup. And it's all trade deadline all the time, all coming up on this episode of the NHL at the Rink podcast.
NHL at the Rink is presented by Skip, the official food delivery app of the NHL.
Welcome into a new episode of the NHL at the Rink podcast. As always, it's brought to you by Skip. Skip to the good part and get groceries, meals, and essentials delivered right to your door on Skip. So if you've been listening, and Sean, I know you have because you're part of this, we had Four Nations, we got through that. We had Stadium Series, we got through that. Everything was great. Well, hey, we got trade deadline coming up. We're recording this on Wednesday. Literally from right now when we are recording this, the trade deadline is, let's just call it, we'll round about 49 hours. Sean, what else can happen?
Well, I think a lot's going to happen, and I'm pretty much running on pure adrenaline right now. Yeah. I don't do the Red Bull, but I could be a Red Bull commercial right now. I do not have any wings. I need wings, so... but I think everything's going to happen because I can't remember a trade deadline where this many teams think they can get in. The yep. Montreal Canadiens think they can get in. The Anaheim Ducks think they can get in. There's five teams that have probably said, you know what, we can't get in. Chicago's one of them, and they traded Seth Jones. There's no sellers. It's got to change. Wow. It's got to change after tonight. There's a big slate of games, a semi slate of games tonight, and then a bigger slate tomorrow. But at some point, some of these teams have to say, I don't think we're going to make up those 6 points with all the teams in between us, and now we're going to sell. And I think if anybody can get to market early and convince one of those teams on the fence by paying a huge premium, that's going to kick the market.
Listen, you're 100% right in this whole thing. It's a little bit weird to me. It's strange because you've got all these teams out there. Like the St. Louis Blues have jumped in. They're 3 points. We're talking right now on Wednesday. They're 3 points out of a playoff spot, and they're 5-1-1 in their past seven games. What are the Blues? I don't know. But if you can get in, I mean, listen, the Blues 6 years ago. Hey, let's see if we can get in. Right? They won the Stanley Cup. Okay. Get hot at the right time. The Montreal Canadiens, they've got five wins in a row. We're the 1 point out. Previous to their five wins in a row, Sean, they were 1-7-1 in a nine-game stretch. What are they? Well, hey, got a chance to get in. You got a lot of young guys. Let's get that experience, right? The New York Rangers, they were, you know, hey, they weren't in a good spot, right? They were not in a good spot. They're still selling guys. Ryan Lindgren, Jimmy Vesey been traded. Riley Smith will be a healthy scratch for the third straight game tonight at the Madison Square Garden against the Washington Capitals. For roster management purposes, he could be traded before the game. We don't know. They're in the wild card too right now. They've won 4 of 5. You know, like, so you're 100% right. And it's amazing to me that we're down to these last 2 days now, these last 48, 49 hours, and are we going to really rely on what does a team do in one game to determine where they are? Is that where we're at right now, Sean?
It is where we're at. I don't know that we should be there. This is such a copycat league. Like, I can't believe nobody's copycatting the Washington Capitals.
Yeah.
Nobody's making that decision where they're like, you know what, we could get in the playoffs. We could back our way in. But are we good enough? Are we good enough to play the Washington Capitals in the East? Are we good enough to play the Winnipeg Jets or the Dallas Stars in the West? Is that a team that we can hang with? And are two home games worth delaying your rebuild or your retool? I don't know what the answer is. And I think it's different for every team, right? Detroit needs to get in the playoffs. It's time. Yes. They need to get in the playoffs, yes. And they're not doing a 100%. Very good job of it. We were just at Stadium Series. They lost back-to-back to Columbus, and then they lost to Carolina last night. And I'm sure there are nightmare visions of last year's slide that knocked them out of the playoffs. They need to get in. Does a team like Montreal? I would argue no. I would argue what they're doing right now is playoff seasoning. And if they were to make whatever moves that they want to make, whatever free agents that they want to get rid of and assets that they want back, if they were to do that, I don't think they fall out of the race. Maybe they still back into the eight, and like Washington, they don't do so well in the first round, but they have that experience and they come into next year in a much better place than they were now, as opposed to holding on to everything that they have in the hope that they get in and get drilled and get nothing for it. Like, to me, Montreal, this is all a bonus. Same thing with Anaheim. Anaheim wasn't expected to be anywhere near the playoffs. So, you know, why would you have the playoffs as the barometer of what you're going to do in these next 2 days? I think it's great because it's going to drive up the prices. When nobody's selling and you finally put somebody on the market, it's like Survivor, right, when they bring out the food during the Survivor Challenge. You know, and you see the first item and people are bid like crazy for it because they don't know what's coming after it. And it's the same thing. What if the one player that comes out is the only player?
Listen, yes, 100%. I got a lot with that. But before we go any further, Doug Plagans, broadcaster, radio broadcaster for the Florida Panthers, who will make the playoffs, who are a Stanley Cup contender and have a chance to repeat and have made moves to get Seth Jones and Vitek Vanacek. Doug will be joining us here shortly to talk all things Panthers, how they have set themselves up there in Florida as not just a Stanley Cup contender, but making that market a destination for players. Terrific interview with Doug coming up. But Sean, all of what you just said, I hesitate to say this, but it all makes sense. You know, I hesitate to say it because I don't want to give you too much credit.
You know what they say, Dan, about the blind squirrel?
Yes, I know.
That's me. I'm the blind squirrel. So I found the nut today.
There you go. So the Montreal Canadiens are a very interesting one. And I think the move that they made to sign Jake Evans to a 4-year deal, $2.85 million per year, indicates to me that they realize they have something going on here, but it's not just for now. It's building for the future, because if they were to trade a 28-year-old third or fourth line center who's a very valuable commodity on this market, they're not getting back a 28-year-old third or fourth line center who will be very, let's call him 29-year-old fourth, third or fourth line center who will be very valuable to the Montreal Canadiens next season and beyond. They can't do that, right? So that's a team that's looked at it and said, the market out there, while it's probably okay, and you're right, it's probably at some a seller's market here because there's not a lot, right? And there's a lot of teams that want to buy, but it's not good enough. So we sign our guy. He wants to be here. We know who he is. We know his role. And we're trying to end a cycle here of missing the playoffs. And if it doesn't end this season, the goal is to have it end next season. And a second-round draft pick doesn't do us any good for that, right? That is what I think some of these teams are looking at. As you mentioned, the Washington Capitals, the retool, right? In a way, it's not retooling because he's already with the team, but in a way, that is what Montreal's looking at. Like, you know, and I think in a way, it's what teams like the Rangers are looking at. Like, okay, we're going to trade our guys that we're not going to sign. Ryan Lindgren, Jimmy Vesey, Riley Smith. Okay, they're not going to be a part of this, but we added JT Miller. We found defensemen in Will Borgen and Erho Vaakanainen in trades earlier this season. We're in a playoff race here, and we're trying to look at it right now, not punt on this season, but look ahead as well to next season. Curious what the Rangers do with that sense. But the team I'll bring up that I think can be the team, Sean, that pops this market is the New York Islanders, right? The New York Islanders have Brock Nelson and Kyle Palmieri. They're coming off a nice win against the Winnipeg Jets. But if you saw the interview that Brock Nelson did with Shannon Hogan on MSG after that game, he was almost in tears. He was in tears. There was very emotional. That could have very well been his last game with the Islanders, certainly his last home game, right? There's an understanding there. I wonder if there is an understanding, to your point, what you said earlier with the Islanders, that are we ready? If we don't do anything here, or should we sign these guys? Like, can the Islanders make a push and push past four or five teams with the way things are going right now? Or is the value in it, trade him in a seller's market, try to get Nelson in particular, try to get a player back, younger if you can, maybe not as impactful right now, instead of just draft picks. I wonder if the Islanders are that team that pops this market.
Well, they should be. I mean, you saw how they played against the Rangers the other night.
It was not good. Not
and the
good.
Rangers
but
are not
came back,
good.
But, Sean, they came back the next night on a back-to-back, and they beat the team that's the best in the National Hockey League.
Did you just hear me about the blind nut? Or the blind squirrel?
Yeah. Very good point. Very good point.
Yeah, again, like, what do they have if they get in? What are they going to do against a Washington, a Toronto? Like, I don't know. But look, I think that's different, right? Because you're talking about an end of an era there.
Yes.
Like, Lou Lamoriello doesn't have many kicks at the can left. You know, Patrick Roy, they don't make the playoffs again. Do things change there? So, like, this isn't a building towards. This is a regression for them. They've made the playoffs. Like, they were one of the eight teams when the year started that you're like, yeah, they should probably be in. Boston was another one. So it's not a Montreal. It's not an Anaheim. It's not a Columbus. It's none of those teams. It's a highly different situation. So, and Lou doesn't just trade to build for the future. He's almost never done that.
Right. Well, that's what I'm saying. If they make this trade with Nelson and Palmieri, who were two pending UFAs, and I mean, listen, Sean, I think I could count 8 to 10 teams that need a Brock Nelson on their team right now. You know, guy who can play second line center for you, third if you need him to, plays on the wing if you need him to, kills penalties, power play can play. Wins faceoffs, can play defensive zone draws, all that stuff. I mean, he's a valuable player. It's why he was on Team USA for the Four Nations faceoff. I think he was, you know, it was a questionable addition to that team because he doesn't have, his name doesn't pop, his numbers don't pop, but this is a guy who's done it for a long time at a fairly high level. And there's 8 to 10 teams in this league that you could think of that need a player like that as they want to push to win a Stanley Cup. The Islanders are in that position where they can provide that, but they can't provide it and get just draft picks in return or a prospect who is a year or two away. That's not the Lou Lamoriello calendar, but they can provide it if they can get a guy in that trade along with a draft pick or a prospect who will be a player for them, an impact player for the rest of this season for sure, but next season and maybe the season after that as you try to retool and get a little younger. Because honestly, if the New York – and I have the utmost respect for Brock Nelson. I certainly have the utmost respect for Lou Lamoriello and the Islanders as an organization. But if the Islanders were to go and sign Brock Nelson to, say, a four-year contract, he's 33, he'll almost be 34 at the start of next year, that doesn't move their agenda forward. It doesn't help them in terms of trying to retool to get younger, faster, and more dangerous.
No, it doesn't. And look, I think people are going to have to get creative. You look at that Florida deal, right, for Seth Jones that was made on Saturday. Like, out of nowhere, that guy says, I don't want to be in Chicago anymore. I'm tired of the losing. And what was your immediate reaction? There's no way they can move that guy.
They're going to have to eat the amount that they did to make him a $7 million defenseman. That's what they're going to have to do.
But even then, it's going to be tough. And Florida, of all teams, found a way to do it. Like, I think at some point you have to be aggressive. You have to roll the dice. If you think you're a legitimate contender and you're one piece away, and that's what Bill Zito thought, you know, he made a huge bet. And he's still drawing cards. Like, he doesn't have the nuts yet. But he made a huge bet to get everybody else out. And, you know, I think it's a huge benefit for them. I think it's a huge reward for Seth Jones that he maybe didn't deserve. I think that might be the hardest part of this whole deal for me to deal with, is a player saying, I got no use for my team. Trade me. And it gets traded to a Stanley Cup contender.
Yeah, it's a good spot for Seth Jones. It certainly worked out for him. I think it worked out for the Panthers, for sure. Well, listen, I guess that's not for us to decide if it should have or not. You know, you and I, the only thing that really bothers me with this is when he went there, the timelines didn't align for what he was looking for and what the Blackhawks were. The writing was on the wall, right? Where the Blackhawks were going. And then 4 years later, you know, they're in where they're at right now at the bottom of the standings, looking to pick in the top three again, trying to build it through the draft, losing games on a nightly basis. And, you know, he drew to his wit's end, if you will. But he's a part of that. Like, he's a part of that. He's a part of the reason why they are not where he wanted them to be or thought they could be. So should it have? I don't know. I guess that's not for us to decide. But we will talk a little bit more about Seth Jones with Doug Plagans in a few moments here. But, Sean, you brought up a team before, and I wanted to bring it up again. Columbus Blue Jackets. We just saw them in the Stadium Series. They just won four games in a row before losing to Tampa Bay. And Tampa Bay Lightning, by the way, are 9-1 in their past 10 games. They're rolling right now. So that one loss to Florida, by the way. What do you do if you're the Columbus Blue Jackets? Because you ask the question, right? Are we good enough to go beat Washington? Are we good enough to go beat Toronto or Florida or Tampa, whoever we end up in the first playing in the first round? My answer right now would be no, you're not, right? That being said, there's something special going on in Columbus, Sean.
My answer is yes.
You think they're big? You think they're good enough to beat those teams in a 7-game series? And I'm going to tell you this right now. What I want to see them do is I want to see if they can either stay status quo or add to the roster a little bit, because we've talked about this. This team, they're such a good story, but it's a team with young guys in Fantilli and Johnson and Matejchuk and, you know, down the list that they have, Voronkov, Marchenko, you know, Sillinger when he gets back. Like, you want to see them push because they're close, Sean. They're way closer than we thought they were going to be.
They're a top 8 team in the NHL since January 1st.
So are the Red Wings, though.
And they just beat Wings twice.
Yeah.
Like, the thing I love about the Columbus team is they play playoff hockey.
The Columbus Blue Jackets know who the Columbus Blue Jackets are, Sean.
That's what Dean Evason told me at the Stadium Series when I asked him if this was a good sales job for the Columbus Blue Jackets on national TV, if he thought that they convinced others about the validity of the Columbus Blue Jackets. And he told me that the Columbus Blue Jackets know who the Columbus Blue Jackets are. And who the Columbus Blue Jackets are is a team that plays playoff hockey every night. My God, are they a buzzsaw? Who wants to play them? They're nuts. They go to the net hard. They go in the corners hard. They have hard players. They just re-signed Olivier, who's, you know, one of the toughest players in the league, but also really talented. Scored a goal in the Stadium Series. Danforth, another one of their fourth liners, scores a goal. Like, they're honey badgers. They're relentless.
Yeah, that's why I want to see them in. That's why I want to see them add. That's why I want – and I think, you know, too, I would bring up that the teams at the top, right, Winnipeg and Washington, have been so consistently good all season long that, you know, you might look at things and say depth, 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 right? You want to add here. But the chemistry works so well for those teams that you almost, like, worry a little bit, like dropping something new in. Can the room handle it? And we'll, you know, listen, we'll talk about that a little bit with Doug Plagans here in a moment. But Columbus has found something that, so I almost asked the same question, Sean. Do you worry about dropping something new into that room? Because there's clearly a tight-knit, close, it's clearly tight-knit, very close.
No, I think their GM, Don Waddell's really good at figuring out who fits and who doesn't. And B, I think what's happening in that room is so much bigger than one player. Like,
yeah.
I don't know how you could go in that room and mess with that mojo. look, what's happening there is special. What Dean Evason has done is quasi. This is the stuff that you make movies about, dude.
Yeah.
This is the stuff. Literally, Saturday night as I'm watching the game and you know, they end up winning and there's 94,000 people in the horseshoe and Dean's losing his mind on the bench like he's 10 years old. Like, everybody's living their dream and it's all been born out of the most incredible tragedy you could ever imagine. Dean didn't sign up for this. Don Waddell didn't sign up for this. None of the players signed up for it. And instead of moping and human nature being paralyzed by grief, every one of them picked themselves up and said, I'm going to fight for you. And it showed in that game in the way that they honored Johnny Gaudreau, right? In the way that they've all said that, like, we're doing this for a bigger cause, right? It's not just about us anymore.
Yeah.
And it's the most powerful thing in the world. Like, it's more powerful than the best player in the world. It's more powerful than the best system in the world. When you believe, when you inherently believe in destiny and that you're destined to be great, you can't be beat. Like, that's the 1980 Olympic team. They believed in destiny. They believed they were going to be great. And they had somebody who was able to push them in that direction and teach them that and make them believe. And they believed and they did it. And now, look, I'm not saying that's who the Columbus Blue Jackets are, but when you watch that room and you watch the way that they behave and you watch what they say and what they believe, I don't want to play them.
You're right. I wouldn't want to play them. I would not want to play them either. Listen, they're the best team story going in the National Hockey League, maybe in all of sports right now. Alex Ovechkin's the best story going in sports right now. Can't argue with me on that. We'll touch on him a little bit. On the other side, we'll touch. We still got a hit on the New Jersey Devils, Sean. We got a hit on the Bruins, Brad Marchand, Oilers. There's still a lot we got to get to, but Doug Plagans, radio broadcaster from the Florida Panthers, joined us. Talk all think Panthers. What is making them so successful in the market so great? We talked to Doug, and the interview is brought to you by Skip. Skip to the good part and get groceries, meals, and essentials delivered right to your door on Skip. Here's Doug Plagans. Doug, thanks so much for joining us. How's life down there in South Florida? How you feeling these days, man?
Feeling great. Feeling recharged still after that Four Nations break and getting to watch some good hockey during that. And the Panthers have come out flying from that break, winning 4 out of 5. So everything's feeling good right now. And the weather's getting warmer down here, which means we're getting closer to playoff hockey weather down here in South Florida.
First of all, there was a break during Four Nations. What is this break thing that you're talking
about?
Well,
you're dead on with that, because for the Panthers, obviously, I know for people like me, there was a chance to kick back and watch a little bit of hockey and take care of some things that, you know, the day-to-day stuff that we don't get a chance to do during the grind of the hockey season. But the Panthers had a league-high 8 players playing in that tournament and a handful of people serving in different staff capacities as well. So, yeah, the Panthers didn't get as much of a chance at a break during that time as a lot of other teams did, but they've shown no ill effects from it whatsoever.
Yeah, neither is Sean and I. We didn't get a break either. We were there the whole time, and it was awesome. But, hey, we're back. And we got the trade deadline coming, and the Panthers have already made some noise. So let's talk Seth Jones first. So, Doug, what was your reaction to getting Seth Jones? I mean, be honest, my reaction was at $7 million, he's perfectly slotted right there, and it's a great place to play right now. What was the internal reaction there? What did you get from being down there from the trade?
All positive. And when you have a chance to bring in a player like Seth Jones, a right shot defenseman with term, who's at that age similar to a lot of the other core pieces on this Panthers team, who are going to be positioned to compete for cups, you know, over the next few years here, it was a great move to make. And when you have a chance to get a guy like that, you just don't pass on it. And he plugged right in here in his first game and it was a really nice transition, looked really good in game one. It was really fitting too, and I asked him about it, but it was really fitting that his first game as a Panther happened to be a matchup in Sunrise against the Tampa Bay Lightning. Really no better way to get a feel for what it means to be a Florida Panther than in a matchup against Tampa Bay when you have both teams playing well and the possibility of another playoff meeting down the road for the two teams certainly exists. And the Panthers got a hard-fought 2-1 win in that game. But plain and simple, when you have a chance to get a guy like Seth Jones into the fold on a contending team like the Panthers do without disrupting your night-to-night roster. Obviously, Spencer Knight had been serving as the backup goaltender to Sergei Bobrovsky this season, had a nice year going. He ends up being the player off the roster that goes the other way in the trade. But, you know, to be able to make a trade like that, get a guy like Seth Jones without disrupting your night-to-night lineup, that's something that can really be a big win for the team, and I think it will be.
Doug, I wanted to ask you, you've been around the team a while now, and I think the thing that strikes me most about this is Bill Zito has no fear about bringing players in. Like, a lot of times when we get this close to the deadline, it's like, oh, I don't know if that guy fits the culture. I don't know if that guy's going to be a locker room fit with our team. Like, Bill's never seemed to have had that issue. And I heard him talk about it a little bit and how he feels that the room is strong enough to handle any of that. But there's been so much change in that room. Where do you think that comes from, and when do you think it happened?
Well, I think first and foremost, I mean, you turn the clock back over Bill Zito's tenure here, he's had such a good knack for finding not only players that are talented that can come in and produce, but also guys that are just fits. I mean, you go back to his first move was bringing in Patrick Hornquist. And Patrick Hornquist is a as much a culture building block type of guy, came in proven winner. You know, that's that was a guy that came in, was able to make his mark immediately. You look at some of the players who've been here and left a positive mark who are no longer here. A guy like Radko Gudas, who still gets talked about, who is a positive locker room influence. And at the same time, you look at players that Bill and his hockey operations staff have been able to identify over the years who've been able to come in here and take their game to new heights. Carter Verhaeghe, Gus Forsling, by the time it's all said and done, that might end up being the best waiver claim in the history of the National Hockey League. We'll have to wait and see mm-hmm. how things play out. Yeah. But he's had an unbelievable knack for identifying fits, identifying, like I said, talented guys who can come out and help the roster win, but guys who are also great locker room fits. And of course, bringing in Matthew Tkachuk, you know, as big an example of that as there's ever been, and bringing in a guy like Seth Jones. This is a guy that Bill Zito had prior knowledge of, obviously, from their time in Columbus. He knew him well and jumped at the opportunity to go out and get him. So it's something that, again, he's had a real knack for over time, not only finding players that can help the team win, but guys who fit in seamlessly behind the scenes in the dressing room. And that's a big reason why this Panthers team's continue to have success. Yeah, it's a really talented roster, but it's a team that's built a great culture behind the scenes, and it's managed to keep that going, as you pointed to, with some changing faces. I think that was something, just kind of a side note, but I think that was something that may have been talked about a bit too much going into the year. I think, honestly, more was probably made of who was no longer here coming into this season, and not enough was made about the continuity this team had. And as you guys know, in a salary cap league, when you have sustained success year over year, there are going to be players that move on, that get other opportunities elsewhere, that get pay raises elsewhere. It's impossible to keep everyone, but this team came into the year returning its 8 leading scorers, a big chunk of its defense. The starting goaltender was the same. Paul Maurice is still the head coach, which is obviously a huge part of this. Bill Zito is still the general manager. I think it was a pretty extraordinary amount of continuity that the Panthers were able to bring into this year. And like I said, now just kind of tying it back to what you were talking about there, to be able to add a guy like Seth Jones to this, a guy that, you know, Bill Zito has prior knowledge working with, it was a no-brainer.
Yeah, you're right about we should have talked more about who was back, not about who was gone. But that's always the conversation, right? That's where the conversation always goes. Like, how are they going to replace these guys? And we forget, you know, you don't replace them in October all the time. And it gets to this point in the season. By the way, they just replaced Spencer Knight. They added Vitek Vanacek as a goalie there. But you spoke about the culture, Doug, and I wanted to dig into that a little bit, because we see it from the players, but you know, we just Sean and I will jump in and we'll see it. We'll see it in the locker room. You'll see it around the arena and whatnot. But you're there day to day. You're around this team. You're way more embedded than we would ever be. What drives the culture beyond winning? What do you see that allows these? Florida has become a destination now. It never was that before. What has Billy Zito brought? What have what's the front office brought? What is it that drives it?
Well, I think there's a lot that ties to it. And obviously the play on the ice and the winning is a big driver of it as well. I think you go back years and you have the commitment to winning and the commitment from the Viola family ownership, and that filters all the way down through the entire organization. It's continued to, and as time's gone on, the buzz around this team has only grown. And then you look at some of the items off the ice, for example, well over a year now at this point, feels like just yesterday, but I believe it was about midway, shortly after Christmas last season, when the Panthers moved into what's now their new practice facility. And it's a beautiful, picturesque, state-of-the-art facility that's not just a great practice facility for the Panthers, but it has all kinds of other amenities tied to it. And there's a concert venue attached to it. You got all the stuff outside the park and the pickleball and all that kind of thing going on. But it's a great practice facility for the Panthers. The players, they want to be here every single day. They want to come to work every single day. I mean, I'm in the facility right now as we have this conversation. But I think things like that, it all just ties into the overall commitment to winning, and guys hear about it and guys want to be a part of it. And you watch the Panthers play. It's an exciting brand of hockey that this group's playing, that they're playing under Paul Maurice. I think you talk to a lot of people around the league and, or you talk to fans, and if their team's not involved, they like watching the Panthers because they're exciting and they've got exciting players. And, you watch Matthew Tkachuk, he kind of jumps off the screen at you, and you watch Barkov and he jumps off the TV screen at you. I think it's become an environment both on and off the ice that, players and people just want to be a part of. And you look at, like I said, the winning that's come along with it and the buzz down here in the community. I think all that ties together, and it's just become a great place to be right now. And like I said, it's not just right now. This is a team that Bill Zito's positioned to be very competitive and a contender for a long time to come.
You're around Paul a ton every day. You get the treat of listening to him every day, but I'm curious, other than the one time we all saw when he lost his cool, we'll call it his cool, on the bench, have you ever seen the man be flustered? He just lost his best player for the rest of the regular season, maybe beyond, and it's like nothing happened.
So I'll say, first and foremost, you touched on a little bit there. Every day we come to the rink and we know we're fortunate to be around Paul Maurice and to be able to talk hockey with him every single day and to be able to interview him after morning skate for every game. He truly gives you such a unique perspective on the sport. And I know that every single day when I have a chance to talk to him, he's probably going to say something that's going to make me watch the next game slightly differently or look for something that I had never thought of before. But I think, as you see it, and what's so impressive with Paul is he's a guy that got a head coaching job in the National Hockey League at such a young age. He's coached and had success in multiple eras of the National Hockey League, and he's continued to have success in doing so. But in mentioning that, there's really not a situation, and this kind of lends itself to what you were talking about with, Matthew Tkachuk going out of the lineup and having to navigate through that right now. There's not a situation that exists in the sport that Paul Maurice hasn't seen before, that he hasn't had some experience in handling. And I think you notice that. And I think that's why he's always got the, as you said, he's always just, so composed behind the bench and calm behind the bench and everything like that. And of course, every coach is going to have their moments where they might get a little bit fiery, but there's not a situation that he hasn't seen. And this team, the players, they love playing for Paul. They have so much respect for him. And I can tell you, too, he loves coming to work and coaching this group every single day and being able to be around them. There's such a great mutual respect and such a great working relationship going. And all the different directions. And you see that. You see the team feeds off Paul. You see Paul, how much he loves being around these guys every single day. It's, you know, I know I'm the voice of the team, and I'm coming from a little bit of a biased view here, but it really is special to see that relationship every single day that Paul has with the players and the players have with Paul.
It's a privilege for Paul to be able to talk to you guys, by the way, too. Don't sell yourself short at all there, Doug. All right. Listen, Sean mentioned to Matthew Tkachuk, right? Okay, so we know he's not going to return for the regular season. The hope is that he's back for the playoffs. I think you would have to put Matthew Tkachuk in about 12 different straitjackets to keep him out of the playoffs. So I think he'll be back for the playoffs. But it does give them some room here. They're in a pretty good position. They're trying to win a division. I'm not going to ask you to play Bill Zito. You are not the general manager of the team, but you watch the team every game. So you look around, you say, okay, is there something you look at and say, we've seen this team make the Stanley Cup run and lose in the final. We've seen this team make the Stanley Cup run and win the Stanley Cup. We could use more of whatever that is. Is there anything that you see? Is there that you say more of that?
So in mentioning that, I'm not trying to avoid it, but I think if I look at the roster right now, and any general manager, I'm sure, is all ears, especially this time of the year. And if an opportunity to shore up something on the roster, if an opportunity to supplement an area of the roster that needs it comes up, plain and simple, an area that you could improve the team, if an opportunity to improve the team comes up, I'm sure every general manager out there is going to be open to suggestions and hear it out and explore that. That being said, you look at what the Panthers have done. I think if you look at, obviously, on defense, that was the big headline recently. They bring in Seth Jones, and now all of a sudden you're looking at this core of defensemen. This is a really strong 1-6 core of defensemen. And if we're just using the first game that Seth Jones played as an example, Uvis Balinskas was the odd man out. He was the healthy scratch. And if Uvis is, and I know there are a lot of folks across North America who may not be entirely familiar with Uvis Balinskas' game, but for those of us who see him play a lot, if that's a guy that's going to be an odd man out, then you're looking at a pretty strong group of defensemen if he's the seven that's going to be out of the lineup on a given night. Vitek Vanacek, veteran guy, that move was just made. So now depth at the goaltending position is back in play. You've got, and Chris Drieger's an NHL backup. We know that. He's an experienced NHL backup, and he's another guy who's in the organization. So now you're looking, you know, a few guys deep, players you could call on that could come in and give you starts if you need it. You know, obviously Sergei Bobrovsky is going to be the guy carrying the mail, but there is organizational depth at goaltending. You look up front, and maybe the big ad hasn't been made in season, but you look back to what they did over the offseason last year. They had to retool the whole fourth line. Tomáš Nosek's done a really nice job as a fourth line center. AJ Greer has played every game this year and has plain and simple brought a style every single night that looks like Panthers hockey and looks like playoff hockey, and he's really comfortable playing in that role. Jesper Boqvist came on in the offseason, and he's really set career highs in everything. Jonah Gajewicz was a member of the Cup team last year and has seen a bit of an elevated role here at times this year, and he's looked really good doing it. So if you look at what moved on from last year, and the other thing I can't forget to mention, Mackie Samuskevich, who was a first-round pick a few years back and had a chance to carve out an every night slot in the lineup, and he's logged second line minutes at times. He's played power play minutes. He looks like he's getting stronger as the season goes along. So a lot of the supplementing to the forward group, that may have been, you know, something that happened over the course of the offseason heading into this year. And now we're seeing it all really, you know, as the season goes along, even further come together. I may be a little bit biased here, but I look at this Panthers lineup top to bottom. It's a team that's played a ton of hockey the last 2 years, obviously won the Stanley Cup last year. And this year, you look up and down the lineup, and I'm knocking on wood, but as things go right now, it looks like a group that has really fewer holes or flaws than anybody else in the conference and maybe in the whole National Hockey League, and their record lately speaks to that. So, you know, what they did leading up to the Four Nations break and what they've done since coming out of it. So I think once again, hats off to Bill Zito. He's put together a really good group, a team that looks prepared and poised and equipped for another playoff run. And hey, we'll see how things go here between now and Friday as far as that's concerned. But at the same time, if this is the Panthers group that goes into the postseason, I think all of us would be feeling pretty good and confident in what they have here.
With that said, you've seen everybody in the East. Who makes you nervous?
So if I'm looking at the teams in the Eastern Conference, I know that we haven't seen it, and I wouldn't say nervous, and I speak to this from the Panthers' perspective, in that you look at these last few seasons. That first of all, I think maybe 11-2, something like that. I'm just going off, off the top of my head here. That may be off by a game or two, but the Panthers' record against teams they've played in the playoffs the last couple of years, it's really good, and they've had no problem getting up for those kind of games. And if they play any of those teams again, I'm sure they'd be, you know, ready for the matchup. But you look at the teams that are out there that I think look like potential forces in the East. I know. We haven't seen the Carolina Hurricanes since the Mikko Rantanen ad, and I know it's been he hasn't totally gotten his footing there since that happened, but I do think that's a really good team and a really well-coached team, as you guys know, and they're going to be ready for a playoff series, no doubt about it. Washington's a really good team. We've seen them play this year, and hats off to Spencer Carberry. He's done a heck of a job. That's a really good hockey team, and they're gonna give teams fits potentially in a 7-game series. So no doubt about that. In the Atlantic, Toronto. The Panthers have 3 games against Toronto, so we'll be paying close attention to those. Obviously, 3 games against Toronto down the stretch. So 1 in March, 2 in April. That could very well be what decides first place in the Atlantic Division. And the Tampa Bay Lightning seem to be picking up steam at the right time too. And Andre Vasilevsky. If Connor Hellebuck weren't in the mix, that might be your Vezina winner this year, just looking at the statistics that Andre Vasilevsky's put together. I know I just threw out, I'm not breaking any ground with any of those. Those are some of the teams, most of the teams on that list have been the contenders out of the East the last few seasons as well. But basically what I've illustrated there, it's going to be a heck of a playoff once this thing gets started. And everybody who gets a seat at that table will have earned it. It's going to be exciting once it gets to that time. And I will say, you look at the Atlantic Division, first of all, maybe there is, I know the players would take any matchup and they're going to be prepared for any matchup. And if we're talking about the Panthers, they've certainly been ready to go for whatever matchup presents itself. Maybe there is some extra incentive this year, though, for winning that Atlantic Division crown, the potential to maybe avoid playing Toronto or Tampa in round one. Obviously, you have a whole host of teams that could be the wild cards. There's a lot that's going to have to shake out there. But maybe there is some extra incentive on winning the Atlantic. That being said, as we all know, Stanley Cup playoffs, no easy matchups. You're going to have to earn your right to get past each round. And we're just excited to see what things look like come game 83 and beyond.
Well, I'll tell you what, though. The rest of the hockey world wouldn't mind a Tampa, Florida first round series. That'd be a lot of fun.
We've gotten kind of used. I'm sure the hockey world's gotten used to seeing that now the last few years. And that's exactly what you want to see, isn't it? Folks around North America, like I said, even people that aren't fans of either team, probably hope that the Panthers and Lightning meet in the playoffs, just because it's become one of those expected rites of spring, I guess, lately, these last few years, that you get to see the Panthers and the Lightning go head-to-head in the Sunshine State Showdown. If a game like Monday night is any indicator, it would be another heck of an entertaining series. So we'll see if we get that, whether it be in round one or round two. But I know that's been something that's been must-see TV for everybody in the years that we've been able to have that matchup.
Doug, last one for you and kind of quick. Since you arrived in Florida, if I had told you since you got there that Tampa would win 2 cups and go to 3, Florida would win a cup and go to 2, the Panthers would have an all-star game that was wildly successful, and both teams are going to play outdoor games next year, what would you have said to me?
You know, I guess pro sports, nothing ever surprises you. But that being said, you'd say, okay, well, if that's going to happen, there's going to be a good bit of building and growth and buzz, and that's exactly what we've had. And it all starts, like I said, with the the commitment from the ownership on down. And this is my 10th season here. So I've really been able to, I've been fortunate enough to see a lot of the build over time and a lot of the buzz. And, you know, as time's gone on, and a lot of that comes with, like I said, you have the commitment from ownership, and then you have the team that's developed into a consistent contender and winner under Bill Zito and winning a Stanley Cup. And you go out and about and you see tons of people wearing the gear. You see the car flags. You hear just casual conversations out and about around town about hockey and about the Panthers. And you sense the buzz at the practice rink on non-game days and everything like that. It's really become a special thing down here in the state of Florida. It's plain and simple. These are hockey markets down here that only continue to grow. And the thing with the Panthers and the Lightning too, there's a ton of respect between the two organizations. And I think the fact that rivalry has become more than just a geographical rivalry. For the first time in, you know, these last handful of years now, both teams are good and contenders at the same time. That was always the thing kind of coming in, you know, the first 15, 20 years of the Panthers and the Lightning. You know, usually when one team was up, the other was down, and vice versa. But now that you've had this stretch of time where both teams have been contenders at the same time, and both teams have often had to go through the other on a deep playoff run, it just adds to it. And I think it's only added to the excitement for hockey down here in this state and in this region. It's been really special to see. And like I said, I think we're just scratching the surface here as far as the buzz that this sport can get down here in the Sunshine State.
Well, no doubt it's become, you're right, hockey markets down there, South Florida, and the fans in South Florida get to enjoy it to the cadence of your voice as we have here. So really appreciate it. You coming on, Doug. Thanks so much. And probably no doubt at some point in the spring, we will see each other.
I can't wait to see you guys. And again, I was so excited to get the invite from you guys. So again, thanks very much for having me. Always love talking Florida Panthers hockey with you guys. Best of luck down the stretch, and hope to see you guys at a rink in the playoffs.
Great stuff there from Doug Plagans. What a radio voice Doug has, right, Sean? Just the best radio voice.
It's really good. I'm really sad I never developed mine. I don't know if I've ever told you this, but I originally went to college to be a broadcast journalism major. And when I got to Syracuse, where all good broadcast journalism majors go,
absolutely,
they told me to find another career because my accent was so bad.
Oh, well.
And so I gave it up, and nobody ever taught me the radio voice.
Yes, the radio voice. Well, Doug has it. And beyond the radio voice, he knows his Florida Panthers. He knows that stuff. He's been in that market for 10 years. That was great stuff with Doug Plagans. The interview, of course, brought to you by Skip. Skip to the good part and get groceries, meals, and essentials delivered right to your door on Skip. Sean, right in here in our backyard, what is going on with the New Jersey Devils? And is, like, okay, they're struggling. We know that. That 2-3 matchup in the Metropolitan Division that we all saw, we're like, oh, yeah, last month we were like, oh, yeah, that's locked in, right? Not so much, okay, with the Hurricanes and the Devils. But now Jack Hughes is out. I haven't seen an update beyond what Sheldon Keefe said on Tuesday regarding Jack Hughes. I don't know if you've seen one. Maybe I've just missed it.
No, tomorrow.
But tomorrow, Thursday, it didn't look good with Jack Hughes coming off slumped over with his right shoulder. We've seen Jack have these injuries before. I think, Sean, the Devils were already in the market for a center, right? To somebody that, you know, okay, you put him as a third-line center, maybe you bump Howla to the wing, you make sure Mercer's on the wing, and now you've got Heisher, Hughes, and whoever that guy is, plus Curtis Lazar, and you're looking much deeper because, listen, it's a why not us Eastern Conference playoff race, right? So you might as well go for it. Now, could they be looking for two centers? I mean, this is a tough sledding right here for the New Jersey Devils. What are your thoughts on them right now?
Call me crazy. Don't buy.
Don't buy.
Don't buy.
You don't think it's the time?
Don't buy. Who knows when Jack's going to come back? Doug Hamilton got hurt in the last game. If he's out, you're down your best center and your best defenseman, and your goalie's just coming back from a long injury, and you're walking into a meat grinder.
Yeah. But that's like punting, though. You know?
When it's 4th and 40?
But it's not 4th and 40. It's not 4th and 40. Not for the, well, listen, we don't know.
Who can they beat? Injury.
If healthy, I think they could beat anybody if healthy. Their defense is big.
Have you looked
at
their
record? Their forward depth is skilled. They can, they if they are healthy, if we talk here on April 17th or 18th.
But they're not healthy.
And the New Jersey Devils have Jack Hughes, and they have Dougie Hamilton, and they have Jacob Markstrom, and Siegenthaler, and the rest, and they're healthy, they can beat anybody, Sean. They're talented, they're big, they're physical, they can play any different types of games, they're well-coached, but they're not healthy. And as we approach the trade deadline, so I can see your point there. Well, what about buying not just for this season, though? So, and I asked that question, right? Simone Nemich they picked him number 2 in the draft a couple of years ago. He's playing in the AHL right now. He's got a lot of potential, a lot of promise, but they like their D, too. And they've got other guys that have come up, you know, Kovacevic, Seamus Casey, right, that have maybe jumped. What if you can use that guy, Nemich, and trade him, and I'm just throwing this out there. I'm not playing Tom Fitzgerald here, okay? I'm just putting it out there. What if you can do that? What if you can use him in a trade to get a guy who's signed not just for this season, not a rental, but you're buying for future as well? And the team acquiring him is looking at his future and saying, we potentially could have a top 4 defenseman right here.
Yeah, if you can do that, that's great. How many hockey trades get done in the next 48 hours?
Hopefully some.
Traditionally, how many hockey trades?
Not many at the deadline.
Get done
it's
at the deadline.
Not typically that type of deadline. No, it's typically rentals. Yes, I agree with you. Those trades are made in advance, February, typically, if you're going to do it.
If you're going to trade Nemich, trade him after the season.
Why?
Because I think you're going to get more value for him.
All right.
Like, so you don't making, buy if you're not rentals. Making a desperation move. You're making a rational move. And I think where the Devils are, they're so hurt, and the hockey gods have been so against them. And their record hasn't been good.
It hasn't been.
I think they're 8-8-3 in their last 19 games. Yeah. Like, so I'm so high on the Devils this year. I was so high on them. There's years when things just go bad.
Tell that to the Boston Bruins.
I was just going to say, look up 95.
Yeah. Well, exactly. Look at the Boston Bruins. That's where I wanted to go next, right? So this has just not been their year. It just, things have not gone well in Boston. And you know what, Sean? It happens, right? Nobody's perfect. No team is perfect. No team, you know, like, I don't know that we're ever going to see Detroit Red Wings 25 years in a row in the playoffs streak. It's just the league has too much parity. It's too hard. Right, especially with, you know, in the salary cap and all that stuff, and even with the cap going up. But the Bruins are there, and they're not out of it, but they just traded Trent Frederick to the Edmonton Oilers, which, listen, I like the trade for all involved. We could touch on it from an Oilers perspective if you want to, but the Brad Marchand situation is very interesting. He's hurt right now. You know he'd be a valuable guy to anybody that wants a player like that at the deadline, right? But he's the culture setter. He's the culture driver. He's the holdover from the Chara Bergeron Bruins. And he's still really good. I would not trade him. I would look to re-sign him. If you can get Brad Marchand on a 2-year deal, even if it's a 3-year deal, you're the Boston Bruins, Sean. I would do that. He sets the tone there. And this team is not far off, right? It's not like they're going into a rebuild. They very much could be like the Washington Capitals were a year ago, right? Go into the retool, change the look a little bit. But don't trade the guy that sets the culture there in Boston. And beyond that, Sean, and tell me what you think. If you keep Brad Marchand, you know what you're going to get at the start of next season? You're going to get a really motivated Brad Marchand. A, to get the Boston Bruins back to where he expects them to be, and B, to play on Team Canada at the Olympics.
It's not much tread left on that tire, my friend.
I disagree. Let's not forget that Brad Marchand's coming off three surgeries.
That's what I mean. He is paying the price for a decade of being a lunatic on the ice.
In a great way. Yeah.
That's in the Keith Tkachuk way.
Yeah.
My boys are lunatics. Brad Marchand's a lunatic. In that same way, he does not care one whit about his body, about his health, about his long-term viability in the sport. He goes out and he puts everything on the line, and he's done it over and over. And he is not a battleship. He's not one of the big boys running around. He's giving up weight classes every time he goes into the corner. It takes his toll. And he did have three surgeries this year. And you think he's going to be healthy over the summer now?
Well, he might be healthier than he was last summer. I don't expect three surgeries.
Yeah, well.
He might have a better summer, a better training, and all that stuff. Done playing.
I think the Bills are coming due, and I would trade him. And you know where I envisioned him to end up? Even after he got hurt, it didn't sway me that much. Vegas.
Well, they're going to make a move, right?
Yeah.
If they make one, is not going to be a fourth line left wing for a sixth round draft pick.
No, you know, they made the injured trade last year. They're not afraid to do it, right? Like, Hurdle didn't play.
But Hurdle was signed.
Yeah.
They knew what they were getting there. It's a different situation. Hurdle was signed. But I understand what you're saying. I understand. I wouldn't move him. I wouldn't do it. I don't think it sends the right message to the rest of the group. I don't think it sends the right message to your entire fan base of where you think this team is right now. I would not do that. Quickly, though, mentioned Trent Frederick from Boston going to Edmonton. What'd you think of that?
I don't think it's enough. I like Trent Frederick. I think he's really good. I don't think it's enough for Edmonton. They're in a lot of trouble. They're not playing well. All right, I'm going to say it, and everybody can come and find me. This is not vintage Connor McDavid.
It hasn't been all season.
That's what I'm saying. It's
been vintage Leon Draisaitl.
Yes.
But it has not been vintage Connor McDavid all season. But those things, that happens, you know? You're not going to get 130 points every year.
The Edmonton Oilers are built to succeed on superhuman Connor McDavid and superhuman Leon Draisaitl.
Well, they are.
They're not very good. Exhibit A, the current Edmonton Oilers.
Yeah. That's 100% right. This is why I like the addition of Trent Frederick, by the way, for Edmonton. For once he gets healthy, he's a bit of a wrecking ball, you know, and they don't have that. They need vintage Connor McDavid in the playoffs. If they're going to win, I mean, listen, we're not breaking any ground here by saying if Connor McDavid is not vintage Connor McDavid in the playoffs, the Edmonton Oilers are not winning the Stanley Cup. No, he has to be Conn Smythe Trophy winning Connor McDavid in order for them to have a chance to win in the playoffs. But they need size up front. They need guys who are going to play a little wrecking ball mentality.
They don't have one.
And Frederick is the guy.
They don't have one.
They don't have what?
A wrecking ball?
Not enough.
Katy Perry wrote Wrecking Ball.
Yeah.
About who?
Corey Perry. Yeah. Corey Perry will be a wrecking ball for them. I 100% agree. But there's also a lot of tread on that tire. There's not that a lot of tread left on that tire either, Sean. So
he's
let's
actually
not
playing pretty well.
Forget that. Yeah, and you expect him to play that role and pop a few in for you. But there needed to be more. Trent Frederick is that type of player, 6'3", 220 pounds. So I like that addition. But listen, the Oilers are not – you could argue that right now, the only guy playing up to his absolute best level is Leon Draisaitl on the Edmonton Oilers. right? And maybe there's a better level for Leon because he's that good.
Yeah.
But he's been really, really good.
Yeah.
If they don't start to get that, they're not going anywhere this season because they're not beating, Vegas. And, you know, well, let's see who they play in the first round. It might be LA, and this might be the year that LA is able to take them down. Who knows? They keep losing to them. So that's going to, but the point I was making before is I like the addition of Trent Frederick, but I'm going to agree with you and say it's not enough. I think they need a little bit more.
Yeah. No, they're not winning 6-4 in the playoffs this year.
Yeah.
And they don't have the goaltending to win 2-1, and they don't have the defense to win 2-1. It's not there right now.
It is not. All right, before we go, one last thing. Alex Ovechkin, the Great Chase, is going on. He's at Madison Square Garden tonight, Wednesday night, to play the Rangers. He's 11 goals away, and now he's leveraged this chase for a really great cause, Sean. Ovechkin and Capitals have partnered with the V Foundation and Hockey Fights Cancer. There will be donations made. They're asking everybody to donate $8 or more to the pediatric cancer, and Ovechkin will be donating. So when he scores the next goal, the amount of goals that he has, that's what he's going to donate. The next one, the amount of goals he has, that's what he's going to donate. So leveraging this, Sean, for a really great cause as well.
Yeah, and Monumental Sports is going to match that, so it's kind of a double, yes, double donation. It's great. I mean, people love to identify with something, right? Like, this is a new way to kind of jump in and help. You know, it reminds me a little of, like, the Ice Bucket Challenge. Like, everybody wants to get involved, and it just picks up momentum. So I think it's great that he's leveraging what you said is the best story in sports right now and kind of making a charitable arm to it. I think it's going to be great, and I just want everybody to know, as Ovi chases this record and gets closer, you'll be covering the game tonight. And then Tom Galitti, our colleague, is going out west with them for their West Coast trip. It's going to be Ovi all the time.
Yep.
Ovi 24/7 on NHL.com, starting today and stopping when he breaks the record. So
yep,
if you need your Ovi fix at the rink, Tom Galitti and NHL.com are your places to be.
Absolutely. And if you want to donate, I should read this. Donations can be made at v.org/great, GR8Chase.com. So, v.org/GR8Chase is where you can make the donations. So, Sean, we got the trade deadline coming up, and then you're going into hibernation for a little bit, as we all should but can't. You know, good for you, by the way, that you can do that. You know, I'm just saying. I know it is. It is. That's true. But this was fun. We thank Doug Plagans for jumping on with us. And as always, the podcast brought to you by Skip. Skip to the good part and get groceries, meals, and essentials delivered right to your door on Skip. Enjoy the hockey.